You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Over the weekend, there was a lot of online discussion and media coverage about the Auckland Central seat and its candidates. Currently, who has been named and is running for the seat is Helen White for the Labour Party and Chloe Swarbrick for the Green Party, namely were the main people involved in this discussion over the weekend. The National Party candidate has not been named yet. The issue was that Chloe Swarbrick hit back online on Twitter about a suggestion posed by the media from Helen that Chloe is merely a celebrity and that voters are looking for a competent leader rather than a celebrity. This is how it's been posed through the media, and so we have the responses from both Chloe Swarbrick and Helen White. So I'll play that in a second. I also just wanted to acknowledge that we were particularly interested here in the BFM newsroom about the way the media frames the Auckland Central seat as a catfight, which is why we have asked both women what they think of the pitting women against each other notion by the media. To begin, here is Chloe Swarbrick speaking with producer Zoe Larson-Cumming about why she believes she is the person for the Auckland Central seat.
Why does Auckland Central always seem to end up a catfight and ignorant of actual discussions of the needs of Auckland Central?
That is a really good question. I think that historically, at least based on what I've observed in the media, it has been the most convenient framing for getting click-throughs on articles,
right.
And also probably the easiest narrative to sell when you have previously two young women running against each other, obviously Nikki Kaye and Jacinda Ardern. In this situation, I think, the statements that have been made, I'm more than happy to give the benefit of the doubt and say that, of course, you know, in politics and when you're backed into a corner and asked a question, you can sometimes end up saying something that isn't quite as nuanced as you intend it to be. But nonetheless, I do think that when statements are made publicly, it is important to respond, because otherwise you end up somebody else having the opportunity to pigeonhole and stereotype you, and I've had enough of that over the last 4 years.
Yep. White asked whether voters were willing to trade competency for celebrity. Two questions on this. Would you say these traits are mutually exclusive, firstly?
Firstly, I'd say if I'm a celebrity, I'm a very D-grade celebrity in the very Auckland, New Zealand sense. But also, I mean, does anyone remember this 22-year-old candidate for the Auckland mayoralty who was absolutely dismissed on the basis of supposedly having no life experience and no ability to do anything, no competency? You know, I've put my head down and worked really hard, particularly over the last 3 years. And I think, if anything, the stickability of me in politics and what people know about me is purely based on my work.
Mm-hmm. And just on that as well, is the combination of the two, competency and celebrity, be it D-grade, is that what we should seek in a successful candidate?
I think it is never a bad thing for Aucklanders to know who is seeking to represent them, because it makes it a whole lot easier to actually investigate that background and go, hey, why actually do I know the name Chloe Swarbrick? And then, you know, Google me, see what I've been up to over the last 3 years. I absolutely encourage that. I've done a huge amount of work on things like student accommodation, mental health, drug law reform, and the education space, and making elections more accessible, including for people with disabilities. But I also will be the first one to say, as I'm on record saying multiple times, that I think there is a real problem with how we have individualized and celebritized politics and change. What I have consistently been trying to do throughout my time in politics is actually have everybody be reminded that the kaupapa is bigger than any one individual. And I do grapple with the fact that, you know, you end up becoming a concept as opposed to an individual part of a broader movement. But nonetheless, I have spent a lot of time in trying to uphold and mentor particularly younger folks who are coming through political movements, because I don't want to be here forever. This isn't about me. This is about long-term change. And I've said it multiple times before, and I'll say it again. You know, I would give up my so-called career tomorrow if I felt like it would be the catalyst for the bigger change, which is totally necessary right now.
White's comments infer that she has proven competency, and yet may not, Does her positioning on the Labor list, given Auckland Central is not a safe seat, suggest that the Labor Party agrees with these claims?
I think it's really important for voters and for New Zealanders to understand MMP, which it's actually reflected in data and polling that, you know, MMP was introduced approximately 22 years ago, and we have less understanding of it now than we did back then.
Oh, wow.
Important thing to know, you have two votes when you go into the voting booth, except for obviously the additional two votes of two different referenda this year, or referendums, which is the terminology that's been chosen by the Ministry of Justice. So you have the party vote and the electorate vote. The party vote is the most important vote because it discerns the proportionality of Parliament. If any party gets over 5%, then they are represented in Parliament. Electorate seats, therefore, don't make much of a difference at all unless there is an overhang of electorate seats to that proportionality. So, for example, you see that in the instance of ACT, where they don't reach the 5% threshold and then get an additional seat apportioned to them. So in the instance of, you know, both myself and Helen putting ourselves forward for candidacy to represent Auckland Central, you have a situation where both of our parties are highly likely to be represented in Parliament because we are both campaigning really hard for the party vote. So the question for Auckland voters is, who do you want to represent you locally? Given my place on the list, you know, I'm hoping that I get in, you know, on the list, but I also actually would far prefer to have the opportunity to represent the city that I love and have been fighting for since I fell down the rabbit hole of politics and running for the Auckland Mayoralty in 2016. But I'd also say that given the list placing of, you know, somebody who sits further down, if you do end up getting voted in by way of the electorate, you actually knock somebody who's higher up the list off of their position. So it's really worthwhile for people to take that into account and not to fall into traps where their votes are kind of taken for granted, where somebody pushes this so-called strategic line. Don't just let somebody tell you what's strategic. Don't just go by what the big party says is the thing that you have to do. Investigate it yourself.
Hmm. What in White's track record suggests, comparative to yours, that she would have a higher level of competency in her work than you?
I don't know. Perhaps she's older.
Hmm. Do her comments say anything of her progressiveness?
I was really gutted by them, to be honest. Again, I don't know the context, and I have been in situations before where stuff has been yanked out of context, but it does seem as though, based on commentary that I have heard from people who've been door-knocked in the area, that that is a narrative which has been running for a while now and, you know, filtered down to the level of the Labour volunteers. But look, anyway, I hope that with the public response to this commentary, that there is an opportunity to reflect and to change. And albeit that regularly being characterised as flip-flopping in the political arena, it's just daft. Like, let's have a debate on policy and our track records and what we have to bring to the table, because I'm pretty sure that pound for pound, I have what it takes to represent the city that I love and that I call home.
Is your quote-unquote celebrity status even enough to make up 8,000 votes?
So really important as well to note that nothing is the same about this electorate race in 2020 except for one candidate, which is Helen. So you don't have Nikki Kaye, who is the incumbent MP. You don't have the same Green Party candidate, which was former Green MP Denise Roche, who, by the way, never ran a two-tick campaign. You also have a global pandemic and the so-called biggest economic recession of a generation. Everything is different. But also I would say that I have spent the last 4 years defying everybody's expectations of what a political candidate should do and what politics is supposed to be. And to be perfectly frank with you, like, I am fighting this to the end. I believe in Auckland Central. It is my home. I love it. And I think that I have what it takes to fight for it and not back down when it comes to falling in line with party hierarchies, which I have seen in the two larger parties. You know, people are willing to say one thing when they're on doorsteps, when they're at cafe meetings, when they're in local debates, but then are pretty damn silent when it comes to being in the halls of power. And there isn't that same moderating influence on a Green Party candidate. We have much less of a hierarchy and far more of an ecosystem around our caucus table.
What are your expectations for Nationals' place in the Auckland Central race?
So, funnily enough, it's O-Week right now, and I was just down at the Green Party, I wouldn't say stall, but we're sitting down on the grass down there, and I bumped into Nikki and said, you know, kia ora, and thanks for, you know, your mahi over the last little while. Obviously, we've got a bit of disagreement, but she was the rightfully elected candidate over the past few terms, and she made it clear that the National Party candidate will be selected on August the 6th, which means that they will only have about 4 weeks to campaign. So it doesn't look as though National are potentially taking this as seriously, which fundamentally means that for left-wing voters, they have an opportunity to make about the most progressive candidate that they want. And also on the idea as well of kind of counting these votes and making these so-called arbitrary kind of positions based on what you think is intellectually the most sound thing to do. I just want people to be excited to vote. Like, how many times have people been told that you need to follow what these establishment parties are saying that you should do, and then you end up with a really unsatisfactory result? People should be voting with both their head and their heart. Vote for who you think is the strongest candidate who will best represent you in Auckland Central. And that is my plea to people. Be excited to vote. Don't see it as a chore. And, you know, that really harks back to the same kind of stuff that I was saying in 2016 up against Phil Goff, former Labor leader. You know, you have an opportunity to vote for a manager or to vote for somebody who is going to offer some pretty visionary, pretty tall orders, but is going to fight tooth and nail to deliver them for you. And I think that I have a track record that proves that.
And just lastly, we briefly touched on this right at the start of the interview, but can you comment on how, when it's two women going up for a position, that it's framed as this, like, battle of women, women fighting each other, pitting women against each other in ways we may not see if it were two men?
Dudes.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that, I mean, shoot, how deep do you want to dig into, like,
yeah,
patriarchal cultural norms? But I think again, it's just the convenient frame. But I would also say that the campaign wasn't previously that. You know, if you look at the way that, for example, Derek Cheng from the New Zealand Herald framed it, he did it in a way that I think was pretty neutral in terms of biases. He spoke about the gloves coming off. That's something you'd hear about male politicians. I think, however, that commentary, like the kind of throwaway celebrity thing, is the same kind of rhetoric that you've heard, particularly against our Prime Minister. And that itself feeds into potentially quite a misogynistic framing of stuff. So I don't think it originally was that, but perhaps we're now leaning into it. And we as candidates have a responsibility to take that back and to present a substantial debate on the issues that matter, particularly to Aucklanders.
You are tuned into The Wire on 95BFM. We are currently midway through two interviews, one with Green Party's Chloe Swarbrick and the Labour Party's Helen White, about the discussions over their Auckland Central seat race over the weekend. Just to further clarify what happened over the weekend, RNZ interviewed Helen White with particular reference to the idea that some had that the Labour Party might do an Ipsum and leave the Auckland Central seat to the Greens. In the interview, Helen White made it clear that she would still stand for the Labour Party in the Auckland Central seat, having lost to Nikki Kaye by 1,500 votes in the 2017 election. The comment reported by RNZ regarding celebrity was as such. Quote, asked what she would say to people who pointed out Swarbrick's higher profile and name recognition, White said, I'd ask them whether they're looking for a celebrity or someone to do this job very seriously. The conversation then took to other major media outlets and Twitter, with people calling out White for naming Chloe Swarbrick a celebrity. I asked Helen White about this idea of competency over celebrity and what she had to respond to the discussion that happened over the weekend. And it is interesting what she has had to say about it. But here is Helen White. Over the weekend, there was a fair bit of discussion and media coverage of the Auckland Central seat and its candidates, mainly yourself for the Labour Party and Chloe Swarbrick for the Green Party. Let's first begin with what you believe you can bring to the Auckland Central seat.
Okay, so I grew up in Freemans Bay, and so my connection with this area is really strong. I when I got there, it was quite a different place. It was a very affordable place for people to live. It was incredibly inclusive. And it had, I think, two really interesting features. One is that anyone could live there. So lots of artists lived there. Look, it was really multicultural. My school was like 90% plus Polynesian. Mm. So it was a really cool environment. But also the urban design of it and the fact that the housing was being built. A lot of the new housing was around little commons and green spaces. So I actually still have friends from that time because it was a really good urban plan. So I, you know, those things kind of reflect into my values. And it was really something that my family just totally embraced. This cool, liberal, amazing community, you know, sort of things like the when the Rainbow Warrior was blown up. There was a guy living in our house who had been on it, you know, he's one of the crew.